This is Parashat Bamidbar, Tavshinayin Tet, in memory of Yosef Hirsch. I've spoken many times about Yosef and how he was special on the occasion of the 16th Yahrzeit, dedicated by his family. I did promise the family something written about something, which I haven't been able to do as yet, but I'm hopeful that I will be able to. The book of Bamidbar is a little strange. It starts off with the counting of Bnei Yisrael. Now, if you assume, as both Parshanut assumes, that the Torah contains things of importance, it's hard to understand what the importance of the counting of Bnei Yisrael was. Even if you say that the counting had something to do with the military, you know, so you have to know how many soldiers you have. How many people do you have above a certain age and below a certain age? Even if you say that, we know that this counting at the beginning of Bamidbar ultimately had nothing to do with that. Because after the Chet HaMeraglim, right, the sin of the spies, in the parish of Shlach, right, Bamidbar, Naso, Balotcha, Shlach, the fourth parish in Bamidbar is the parish of the Meraglim. As a result of what happened with the Meraglim, with the scouts, the Jews were punished at that time by 38 years of wandering around in the desert. And during those 38 years, they all died. All the people who participated at that time. And then the Jews are counted a second time in the book of Bamidbar, in the parasha of Pinchas. You don't have to rush to look it up, but believe me, it's there. So that in the parasha of Pinchas, you could argue that the Jews were counted, in order to prepare them to go into Eretz Yisrael, prepare them for war, to prepare them for whatever. It still remains a mystery as to why they were counted in the book, the beginning of the book of Bamidbar. Summarize. In the book of Bamidbar, the Jews are counted twice. Once in the parasha of Bamidbar, and a second time in the parasha of Pinchas. Now, you could say whatever you want to say about the counting of the parasha of Pinchas. You could say it's before they came into Eretz Yisrael, it's a landmark in Jewish history. You could say it had something to do with the military obligations they were going to have, even though we know that when they came into Eretz Canaan, they attacked Jericho. The way they attacked Jericho was by running around the walls, and the walls came tumbling down. Now, in such a situation, you don't really need much of an army. It wasn't exactly the army that won the battle. Or when Yoshua saw that there was difficulty in the battle against Ai, so Yoshua said the obvious thing. You know, he said, Shemesh begibon dom v'yareach ve'emek ayalon, which means, he said, look, I need a little more time. Said Ribbono Shel Olam, I need a little more time. If the day falls, that what day does? Day ends. If the day ends, then I won't be able to win this battle. So please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, keep the sun shining and keep the moon from, you know, taking over the heavens. And that's what happened. So with those kinds of battles, it's not clear why there had to be a counting of Bnei Yisrael before they went into Eretz Yisrael, but that counting is in the parasha of Pinchas, not in the parasha of Bamidbar. Parasha of Bamidbar, the counting remains a kind of a mystery. So the first Rashi, it's not on the sheet. This is my fault, but it's not on the sheet. So I schlepped the Chumash with me. The parasha Bamidbar, the beginning of Bamidbar, Rashi addresses the question. And Rashi says, Mitochi batam lefanav, moneh otam kol sha'a. So Rashi says, because God loved them, meaning B'nai Yisrael, he counts them at every opportunity. He counts them. To me, it always seemed that that Rashi meant that Rashi didn't know the answer to the question. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have to count them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows how many there are. Right? It's like magical, mystical. You know, what does he have to set Moshe Rabbeinu to count them and make this complicated thing? Mitochi batam lefanav. Mone otam kol sha'a. He counts them again and again. Kishayetzu mimitzrayim mina'an. Remember the beginning of the book of Shemot. Ukshenaflu ba'egel mina'an. The parasha of Kitisa. Parasha of Kitisa. Leida handotarim. We want to know how many are left. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to envelop them with his presence, Shechina Aleihem, Mina'am, so that's a good time to count them again. V'echad b'nisan ukam ha-mishkan, v'echad b'iyar minas'am. The first of Nisan, the Mishkan was built, first of Iyar, the first of Iyar, Mina Amikandim. That's the part of Dvarim. Look, I don't know what's the grace of Chiba. I don't understand why Rashi says that this is an act of love to count B'nai Yisrael. Maybe counting is like distinguishing. Everybody has a number. Everybody is separate. That even though I can count them, I can add them up together, but when I count them, each one is an individual. Maybe somehow that's called chiba, according to Rashi. I don't know. Maybe, but I do know.
Maybe it's to communicate to the B'nai Yisrael that.
What?
Maybe it's to communicate to the B'nai Yisrael that fact.
Maybe. I mean, you mean like Yitzhak Mitzrayim didn't do it, and Matan Torah didn't do it, and building the Mishkan didn't do it. Now, we'll count you. That'll do it. I don't know. It's not the way we learn to think about it. The beginning of the parasha of Vayeshev, Bereshit. Right, the beginning of the parasha of Vayeshev. Just 1 second. It's really harder when you can't see. Here I am, Vayeshev. If you remember the beginning of Vayeshev, the Torah says, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megorei aviv be'eretz kenan. That Yaakov dwelt in the land where his fathers lived. You know, after he went to Chutz La'aretz, he came back, he lived, he was now in Eretz Kenan. Eile toldot Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvasrei Shana. Okay. So that's a question. Why does the story of the progeny of Yaakov start from Yosef? Why doesn't it start from Reuven, who is the eldest? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda were the four sons born first to Leah. And Yosef was born a long time after that to his mother, Rachel. And yet this parasha, which kind of is going to talk about the family of Yaakov and the history of Yaakov, so this parasha starts with Yosef. So Rashi says a few things about that. But one of the things that he says is this. The Torah is expansive about the story of Yaakov. About Yaakov. Expansive. Kol gilgulei sibatan. Everything that happened to them, the children, And what that cause and effect, that's Gilgulin. L'fi she'hem chashuvim, l'fnei ha'makom, la'arich b'hem. And he says that it is an indication that God thinks they're important, or it's important to talk about them, or it's important to learn about them. Right? This same idea, l'fi she'hem chashuvim, l'fnei ha'makom, la'arich b'hem. V'chein atam motzei ba'asarat dorot shel mi'atam v'ad Noach, Ploni holi ploni, shevale Noach. Arich bo, the same thing is true of the Torah. The 10 generations from Adam HaRishon until Noach are stated one after the other. Ploni holi that ploni. We get to Noach. There's a big story that is told. So obviously we come to the conclusion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a certain kind of fondness for Noach and not for the 10 generations in between, right? וכן בעשרה דורות שמנוח ועד אברהם כיסה בהם. The 10 generations from Noach to Abraham are told briefly in the Torah כיסה בהם. ומשהגיע אצל אברהם העריך בו. And then Rashi says the following, משל. What's a משל? משל is a kind of a metaphor. Like, so when do you bring a metaphor after you bring the explanation of the metaphor? Only when the explanation is somehow doesn't strike you. Like, I want to make it, the metaphor sounds better. It's not like Shir HaShirin is a metaphor according to the Rambam. Right? The Rambam says, the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Am Yisrael, is stated as a metaphor in Shir HaShirim, as the love of a man for a woman. That's what the Rambam says. Okay, but here there's something else. Here it says that the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Noach and Abraham and now Yosef, the love for them is in the lengthy rendition of their lives. That's called Ahava, Chiba. Right? Ahava and Chiba. And then he adds a mashal. And the mashal is, I'm sorry, I forgot to write this down. She get a mashal in margalit shenefla bein hachol. A jewel falls into the sand. A jewel falls into the sand. Adam emashmesh b'chol. Bikovro b'chvara. So he takes a, what do you call that?
Sifter.
What?
Sifter.
No, you know, what do they have? Those Bnei Brak sifters? You know, like with very small holes. So you put the dirt into the Bnei Brak sifter. And you sift out the dirt and you end up with the margalit. And he says, Mishemitza'ah, when you found the jewel, he throws away all the garbage that he has in the sifter, and he takes the margalit. He takes the margalit. So it's like the Bashal says, Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling the story of the Jewish people in the Torah. He talks about Yaakov, and Yaakov ran away, and Yaakov was with Laban, and then he had wives, and they actually came back to Eretz Israel. And that was all in one parak. And now he starts talking about Yaakov and Eretz Yisrael. That's the margalit, that's the jewel. So in order to explain these two events, the story of Yosef on the one hand, and the story of the counting of Bnei Yisrael, Rashi does something that you're not supposed to do. He anthropomorphizes God. He says God likes it or doesn't like it. Right? Which is not quite the same as saying God approves of it or disapproves of it. It's not judgment. It's like an emotion. It's like an emotion. So that's what Rashi says about the counting of Bnei Yisrael at the beginning of the parasha of Bamidbar. So the first thing I wanted to say was that I don't understand that Rashi. Why would Rashi say that? The second thing I want to say is that there is something noteworthy about the counting of Bnei Yisrael in the desert that should be addressed. And that's, I think, that's on the sheet. The sheet says, Perek Aleph Pasuk Mem Zayin. You see the sheet? Halevi'im Lemate Avotam Lo Hatpagdu B'tocham. But the Levi'im, the tribe of Levi, was not counted B'tocham. What does B'tocham mean? With them. Right? They weren't counted along with the other tribes. Pasuk Mem Chet. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor Pentet. Achet Mate Levi Lo Tifkod. You should not count the Levites, the Et Rosham Lotisa, do not raise up their heads. That's how they counted per capita. Betoch Bnei Yisrael, in the midst of Bnei Yisrael. Vata, but you, who's you? Who would you say? Right? Moshe. You would say it's Moshe, right? This is, that's what's said in the previous Pasuk. Vata avkeda dalavim al mishkan ha'idut va'kol kelav, and you put them in charge of the mishkan, the tabernacle, eidut, where the aseret ha'dibrot are, va'kol kelav, and all the vessels of the mishkan, va'kol ashelo, and everything connected to it, heima yisu et ha'mishkan ve'kol kelav, they the levim are the ones who are going to be charged with carrying the Mishkan and all of the vessels. They will serve it. And they shall dwell around the Mishkan. But they won't be one of the tribes in the regular places, which is around the Mishkan Haidut, right? Like a square. Three tribes on each side, but the Levim should be near the Mishkan Ha'idut. That's what the pasuk says. Rashi goes on, and Rashi says, "Kedai hu l'gion shel melech liyot nimnel levado." It's reasonable that the officers, those people who are in charge of protecting, should be counted separately. In other words, what problem does Rashi have? Rashi doesn't understand why, what the connection is between what Levi is going to do and the fact that they're counted separately. I mean, everybody's counted separately. Reuven is counted as Reuven, and Shimon as Shimon, and Levi as Levi. Everybody's counted separately. So what does this mean where the Pasuk says, Pasuk Mem Zayin Alevi'im Lo Hatpagdu B'tocham? And it was when you added it all up. How many are there? Bnei Yisrael. You say there's Bnei Yisrael, and there's Bnei Levi. But what was the point? Why couldn't you count the Bnei Levi just like you counted the Bnei Reuven, the Bnei Shimon, the Bnei Levi? What's the difference? What is the difference? So Rashi says, Kedaihu. What is Kedaihu? I mean, it's a word from the Medrash. What's Kedaihu? It's like reasonable. Reasonable means that if it wasn't that way, I wouldn't say anything. Would it bother me if they counted Bnei Levi along with everybody else? I don't think so. So Rashi says, "Kedayu l'giot shemelech liyot nimne levado davar cher." What is davar cher? The what?
Another.
Yeah, but I mean, what does it say about the first interpretation?
Something was missing.
Not so sure.
Maybe, yeah, you know. There's something that's annoying Rashi. Something maybe what we said. That the fact that Levi has special tafkidim, he could still be counted with all of Bnei Yisrael, but counted separately. All the tribes are counted separately. Every tribe is counted on its own. Rashi says, Davar Acher, Safa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sha'atida La'amod Gzeirah al kol hanimnim miben esim shana v'mala sheyamutu b'midbar. You see those words? Safa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kadosh Baruch Hu noted, right, saw the future. Safa means the future. שעתידה לעמוד גזירה על כל הנמנים מבין 20 שנה ומעלה. All of the ones who counted, who were counted, all of the people of Israel, all the tribes that were counted, would be counted, and they would be punished. They would be punished in the parish of Shalach, right? Sheyamutu b'midbar. They will all die in the desert. Amar, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Al yu elu b'chlal, lefi she'em shali, shelo ta'u ba'edah. These are my people, they're not b'chlal, they're not included. In other words, in order for Rashi to give some sort of comprehensible understanding of what was going on, he had to resort to a medrash, which talks about God acting in the future. Like, it's like, you imagine God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, don't count them with everybody else, count them separately. Moshe Rabbeinu says, why? He says, I can't tell you. Because I can't tell you what's going to happen in the future exactly. But believe me, this is the way it has to be. So I feel it's a weak presentation by Rashi, the second interpretation, but it's a necessary one, according to Rashi. Necessary. Okay.
But the Midrash is inconsistent. They wandered for...
What do you mean? The Midrash has many opinions.
Yeah,
what
no,
mean?
But they wandered for 38 years because of the Chet HaMeraglim.
It is Chet HaEgel. Yeah, okay. Okay, you're right. We're not talking about that.
But I thought also counting them is a sign of love. So don't count mine, don't count the Levim. It's also a problem.
Okay. Now let's look at the Ramban.
Do we have a makor that the B'nai Levi didn't cry and didn't participate in Chet HaMeraglim?
Who, the Levim?
Yeah.
The Levim were... No, we don't have that. But they were in the Mishkan HaEidut. They had a different... Anyway, there, according to that, I mean, that may be the reason that, you know... That when Moshe Rabbeinu said Mila Shem Elai after the Chet HaEgel, so that sort of sealed their fate on the good side. Uh-huh. And even if they did something wrong, so they were different than everybody else. Uh-huh. So let's look at the Ramban. You see the Ramban? I'm going to read the Ramban. It's a very important Ramban in my opinion. Hinei mitchila ra'am Moshe midato shelo lemenot alabiyim. Say it again. Hinei. Mitchila ra'a Moshe midato shelo limnot et ha-Leviyim. That this business, not counting the Leviyim, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that all along. He knew that he wasn't going to count them with everybody else. How did he know that?
How does Ramban know
that? What?
How does the Ramban know that Moshe?
Okay, he's going to tell you the Ramban. He's got a defense. Mipnei ne'emar lo, v'itchem yiyu ish ish l'mateh. He says that when they counted them, each tribe had to show up with a nasi. Each tribe was led by a exilarch, right? And Lo mana otam. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, since there is no nasi for Bnei Levi in the list, in the beginning of the parasha, there's a list of the nasiim of the different tribes, but there's no nasi for Levi. So the Ramban said that Moshe Rabbeinu was a good student in the yeshiva, and he saw that there was a difference between all the tribes and the tribe of Levi. All the tribes, God said, bring the nasi when you count them. And the Levi didn't have a nasi. So Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he would not count them. Okay? He would not count them. V'inei Moshe misupak v'inyan ha-Leviyim v'lo yadam ha-yaselem. As a result, Moshe Rabbeinu was like, didn't know what to do. Should he count them? Shouldn't he count them? He didn't know. We talk about before this pasuk in Perek Aleph pasuk, whatever it is, Men Zayin, right? Before God said, "Don't do it. Do it this way. Don't do it that way." Moshe Rabbeinu, it wasn't clear to him. It was not clear to him. He says, I'm in the fifth line, the third word. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 line, third word. Kasher hishlim kol hapkudim ba'am v'nisharu ha-leviyim b'livadam, when all the tribes had been counted and only the Leviim were left out, Pireish lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Shelo yimne otam betoch b'nei Yisrael v'yimne otam levadam. He should count them alone, the B'nai Levi, and not include everybody else, because with everybody else, there's a subtotal and a total. Right? Each tribe has a subtotal, and then it's all totaled up to 600,000. Right? But the Leviim were not included in that total. They had their own counting, right? Vama lahalan. Again, v'yimne otam levadam. You should count them separately. Ki yafkidem, because God will place them responsible to me for Mishkan ha'idut v'amar pakodet b'nei Levi. Tell them, count them. Sheyifkidem hu levado bechol below hanesiim. Below hanesiim. That each account of it. This is the Ramban. And then the Ramban says this. V'hu kara Aaron sheyemo. And he brought Aaron into the picture. He, Moshe Rabbeinu, it wasn't that Aaron was the Nasi of B'nai Levi. He was the patriarch of the family. But he wasn't officially a Nasi. V'hu kara Aaron sheye imo ki hu nasi ha-shevet ahu. He, in fact, was the Nasi. He wasn't the Nasi like the other Nasiim who appear in a list at the beginning of Bamidbar. But he was like the head of the family. Kasher ayu nisiyei Yisrael v'shivteyem, just like all the patriarchs were in each tribe had one. Kein yiyei nisi ha-leviyim bam. Similarly, Aaron became like the Nasi. Who appointed Aaron the Nasi? Moshe Rabbeinu. How do I know that Moshe Rabbeinu appointed him the Nasi? Because he called him. He said, I'm going to go count them. I want you to come with me. I want you to help me. You're the Nasi. It was Moshe Rabbeinu's appointment. So according to the Ramban, Moshe Rabbeinu originally knew that he wasn't supposed to count the Leviim. Right? And he knew that the remez was they didn't have a Nasi. Every other tribe was counted with the Nasi. Finally, HaKadosh Baruch says to them, no, you would count them separately. He knew that would be the case, and he, Moshe Rabbeinu, seems to have appointed Aaron Nasi. How could he appoint Aaron Nasi? Look at the next line in the Ramban. Liza atama nakud al ve'aharon. Aharon. You see, Bamidbar Perigimel, the source, Bamidbar Perigimel, Pasuk Lametet, no?
Yeah.
The third Pasuk is Lametet. Kol pekudei ha-leviyim asher pekad Moshe v'Aharon al pi Hashem l'mishpechotam. It says Moshe v'Aharon, but what is he talking about? You see, the Ramban says Tam ha-nakud al Aharon. What do you say? The Bar Ilan is not perfect. I'm so unhappy. I'll show you. This is all, I think, mostly taken from the Bar Ilan. Gimel. Gimel. Lamedes, right?
Yeah.
Abraham, you want to read the pasuk? No, you read it from the Chumash. I mean, you have to read it from the Chumash. This is called the Chumash. This is like a standard, typical, regular Chumash. As regular as it could be. It's put out by a company called Hamaor. So it's a little clearer than the old Chumashim, but it's all okay. Okay, go.
Kol pikudei haleviim asher pakad Moshe va'aharon.
Ah, and how does va'aharon look? The word va'aharon.
It's got the measles.
It doesn't have the measles. It has dots on it. If it had the measles, it would be on the letters themselves.
Okay.
So there you go.
Vaccinated and it's repeated.
There you go. Now you know what letter, what dots are letters. So there's a. I have here. There's a masechet called Sofrim. There's a collection of halachot. It's a collection of halachot from Tanaim and Amoraim, called Masechet Sofrim, which is usually printed in the volume of Shas called Avodah Zarah. Why that happened? I think when they published the Shas in Vilna, they had a problem selling it. They were afraid if they published the whole Shas, nobody would be able to buy it. It's like trying to buy Schottenstein today, right? You know, you have to move to a bigger house. So the Almon Eron, or somebody in that business, was a good business person, and they decided to sell the Shas volume by volume. So the first volume they sold was Brachot. It's interesting if you ever have time or inclination to take the volume called Brachot and look in the back. And all the things they put in extra to kind of convince people to buy it. By the time they got to Avodah Zarah, which is like about 10 volumes in, you know, people got bored of paying all that money for just getting Masechtot. So they put out Avodah Zarah, they made it also special. They put in all kinds of extra stuff, you know, like people do today, except in those days, the only extra stuff they could think of putting into a Gemara is more Gemara. So like the things have changed a little bit, but so that's Avodah Zarah. So the second Sofrim is about Sefer Torah. And in Perek Vav, which I'm looking at, Halacha Gimel, it says, Eser Nekudot Batorah. There are 10 words or 10 different places in the Torah where there are dots. And it quotes this word Aharon as one of those places. And in fact, if you look into a Sefer Torah that you read in the shul on Shabbat, this Shabbat is Bamidbar, right, in Israel. So if you look in the Sefer Torah, when you look at that word Aharon, you'll see that it has dots on it. The dots are very early. They're not punctuation marks. They are just dots. So what are they there for? So there was a problem in the olden times. If you wrote on parchment, let's say you were writing something on parchment, yes? And then you wrote a word that you added a word by mistake. You know, that's something copyists do. People who type do that all the time. They suddenly don't type what they're reading. They type what's in their head. And they type, so you write an extra word. So what do you do with an extra word written on parchment? What do you do with the extra word? So if you have to replace the word by another word, so you take a knife and you scratch away at it. Right? And eventually you hope that you'll scratch away and you'll have enough parchment left to write correctly. But what if you add a word? So, or another possibility is you scratch away and you make a hole in the parchment. So you could take a piece of parchment and glue it on in the back and then keep writing in a Sefer Torah. Yes, but what do you do if you have an extra word, if you've written an extra word that doesn't belong there? Because if you scratch it out, you scratch out that extra word, you end up with a space. And somebody can come along and add something in that space, and you don't want that. So the method that was devised, is when you have an extra word in a document, in a contract. So what you do is you put dots on it. You don't erase it physically, but you put dots on it, which indicate that that word doesn't belong there. Okay? We got it? In the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar is like the Tosefta of Pirkei Avot. It's Tanaitic material. There's the record. It records a conversation between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Ezra HaSofer. You know that Ezra HaSofer was called HaSofer because he was the ultimate Sofer. What does that mean? He corrected the Torah. When the Jews came back from Babel, even though they'd only been in Babel 50 years and then 70 years and maybe 100 years, when they came back from Babel, they lived in different places. And they wrote Sifrei Torah, apparently, and they weren't always so careful about how they wrote. So Ezra had to determine what the text of the Torah was, what the correct text of the Torah was. So Ezra says, Ezra says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, these 10 places, I'm not sure if the word should be there or it should not be there. So if it should be there, I'm quoting, if it should be there, I wrote it. And if it shouldn't be there, I put dots on it. That's Ezra's trick. Ezra Sofer, that was his trick for making a perfect kind of Torah. So that means that that word Aharon, which Abraham said has dots on it, right? That word Aharon is written and not written in the Torah. I mean, we don't know why, but the Ramban says maybe that's because originally Aharon was not part of the tribe, was not the Nasi of the tribe of Levi, and that eventually Moshe Rabbeinu brought him in to act like the Nasi of the tribe of Levi. And in order that we should not think that the tribe of Levi was like all of the other tribes, well, we shouldn't think that. He put dots on the word Aharon when he taught it to B'nai Yisrael. So, there you have it.
This is in Avos Rabbi Natan or in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer?
No, Avos Rabbi Natan. What did I say? I didn't say that. I think Perek Lamed Gimel. Avos Rabbi Natan is a very big book. It's a very big book. What?
Say it again. In order that people should not think, or in order that people should think?
I mean, no. Ezra said, I don't know. Oh, which people? People.
So
he's not sure whether it was the original intention of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Aaron should be there, or the original intention was that Aaron should not be there.
Right, but then the next sentence.
What?
About whether you should think that he was part of the Nasi of the tribe, or not of the Nasi of the tribe.
Right.
Right, so I didn't know.
Both are possible. Ezra didn't know. Ezra didn't know, but the Ramban uses that as an indicator that the inclusion of Aaron, so to speak, in the process was not obvious, was not clear. It was a Moshe Rabbeinu invention. It wasn't really what HaKadosh Baruch Hu originally intended. That's what he says. Now this separation...
Who says that Ezra said that?
That's the Avos Rabbi Natan. The Avos Rabbi Natan, I say, is like the Tosefta of Pirkei Avot. In other words, Mishnah was compiled by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and there's another compilation that is similar to the Mishnah called Tosefta. Right? And that was compiled by students of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. They're very similar, so it's like there's the Mishnah, that's like the main thing, and then there's the Tosefta, which has a collection of left out material.
So the time difference between Ezra and the person who says this is what Ezra meant.
When was it? I don't know if there's a time difference. I don't know. It could be more or less contemporary. Well. The Mishnah was written long after Ezra.
Hundreds of years.
Ezra came back to Eretz Yisrael. Zerubbabel came back in 535 BCE. What's his name? Shimon HaGadol, the Kohen Gadol, is like 250 BCE. I'm sorry, Alexander the Great was 333, I think, BCE. Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great met up with Tanaim. Alexander the Great, the first, and from that time until about 250 or 200 CE, is the period of the Tanaim. So during that period, the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar was written. I don't know how it was written. It was written in pieces or put together, taken apart, but you know, I don't know that.
When you saw it in the bar lot, they didn't have the dots? Is that the mistake you said?
Well, yeah, that's what you have here.
Yeah, okay.
You have it here without dots.
That purpose, or that's just...
I imagine it was difficult. Since there's only 10 words like that, you'd have to have more lines in the program. And I think it was just a problem for the program, because those dots appear in the Sefer Torah. And they appear in all the fancy Tanakhim. The Koran Tanakh, the Efil Yediot Achronot Tanakh, they all appear in all the Tanakh.
They're also on the Sephardia website, I just checked.
Oh yeah, they're in there?
Yeah.
No? I don't use that. It looks
I
funny.
Use it every day.
Yeah, it looks funny to me, like, you know. But it's okay, but it goes to show you that somebody is trying to use the internet for good. So look at here, the Rambam. I'm left with the question of, how did this happen? That Levi is designated. Okay, it's true. They deserved to be rewarded for not participating in the Chet HaEgel. But why didn't they participate in the Chet HaEgel? I mean, why B'nai Levi? Why weren't they just people who didn't participate?
Look at Aaron was a central participator.
Well, I mean, so he's defended.
He's the one with the dots.
He's defended by the fact that he tried to do something that would avoid a major catastrophe for everybody, but he was not able to do it.
But isn't there also sort of an issue that Levi is merely a tribe when you're making the 12 tribes?
Watch out for Chassidut. Just let's look at the Rambam. Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Aleph, the end of the Perek. The Rambam says this. It got stronger and stronger. What's it? I mean, of course, you don't see it, but that's what Perek Aleph is about. Avodah Zarah, idolatry. Idolatry was rampant, the Rambam says. Bivnei Yaakov benilvim aliyem. With the children of Yaakov and those who joined up with them. So that by the time the family of Yaakov was established, the whole thing was on the verge of collapse. What's the whole thing? The whole thing is what Avraham Avinu invented. That you have to worship one God, and you can't worship a multiplicity of gods. And here the Rambam says that the children of Yaakov gave it up. They were all idolaters. Now, Vimalehem, v'naseit ba'olam uma sheyedat et Hashem. And there was in the world a nation that yodat et Hashem ad, right? There was, in the past, there was this nation, ad she'archu hayamim liYisrael v'mitzrayim, until they were slaves in Mitzrayim. V'chazru l'lmod mi'aseihem, that they once again learned from the Egyptians how to act, v'lavod kochavim, and to be idolaters, k'motam, like they were, chutz mi'shevet Levi, shamad b'mitzvat avotam. Only Shevet Levi was able to maintain the tradition of one God. And furthermore, the end of the second line, Lo Avad Shevet Levi Avodat Kochavim. Shevet Levi never did an idolatrous act, even in Mitzrayim, even enslaved in Mitzrayim.
They weren't enslaved in Mitzrayim.
What?
Right, they weren't enslaved in the same way, Shevet Levi?
That's an explanation. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just reading the Rambam.
There's a lot of questions. I'm
very much a nudnik when it comes to that. Kimat kat, that's Hebrew. In a moment, ayayikar sheshatal Abraham. You see the Rambam's idea of the Jewish people, right? Kimat kat, it just was just that close to the element that it was implanted by Abraham, Nekar, uprooted, v'chozrim b'nei Yaakov lita'ut ha'olam v'ta'iyutam. They were this close to becoming like everybody else. That's what happened to them in Mitzrayim. They were going to become idolaters, they were going to become like the Egyptians, they were going to just be like everybody else in the world. Umeyavata Shemotam, because God loved them. Umishamro et Hashivu al Abraham Avinu Asa Moshe Rabbeinu. And because God loved them, Chiba, God loved them, He produced Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabban Shekol HaNeviim, Vishelacho, and He sent him. Since Nitnabe Moshe Rabbeinu Bachar Hashem et Yisrael Lenachala, and God accepted Bnei Yisrael as the inheritors, Hichtiran b'mitzvot Modiyan derech avodato Umayye mishpat avodat kochavim. He taught them the mitzvot and the derech avodato. You see that the Rambam holds that the mitzvot are what protect us. They're the limit. If you do the mitzvot, you won't fall into that trap. Mishpat avodat kochavim v'kol hato'im acharav. So you see that the creation of Am Yisrael, according to the Rambam, and we just had Pesach, not so long ago, according to the Rambam, Pesach is about the victory of an idea. The idea is that there's one God, that God created the world, and that you have to accept directives from God. That's the victory of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Why is it a victory? Because we almost lost. We were influenced by and accepted for a while and became part of the idolatrous world. But within that world, and even though Moshe Rabbeinu was a gift from heaven, expressing God's love for Bnei Yisrael, the Rambam cannot understand how they could be a world. The Rambam, right? The Rambam living in Alexandria in Spain, learning Torah and teaching Torah, he could not understand that there could be a period of time when Am Yisrael would reject the Torah. So that as unlikely as it seems, after all, the Rambam was not talking about history. The Rambam was not trying to tell us that something is historically accurate or not historically accurate. What the Rambam is saying is, you know, Chazal, they answered the question. And the question is not why were the Leviim rewarded for not participating in the Chaita Egel. The question was, why didn't the Leviim participate in the Chaita Egel? Should I say it again? The way I understand the Rambam is that the Rambam's question was not why were the Leviim rewarded for not participating in the Chaita Egel? The question was, why didn't the Leviim participate in the Chaita Egel? Why were they just Leviim? Why weren't there a few people from here and a few people from there? Everybody else participated in the Chaita Egel. But the Chaita Egel indicated that the Leviim was separate, that they had something special to them. And this was the saving factor, according to the Rambam, of the Jews in Egypt. The Jews didn't even scream to God. They said, get us out of here. It was only 210 years and not 400 years as was promised to Avraham Avinu. But they said that we're not going to make it. We're not going to make it for 400 years. You got to get us out of here. Got to get us out of here now. And so, Kodesh Baruch Hu did so. But what kept them going for the 210 years, what made it possible to see that community as Am Yisrael, was the tribe of Levi, according to the Rambam. It doesn't matter whether it's historically accurate, but the Rambam's intuition seems to me to be correct. That had to be something. It couldn't just be that everybody was an idolater and that God saved them. That doesn't make sense. There had to be a redeeming feature. Bnei Israel had to prove that they were worthy. And that worthiness came through the tribe of Levi. And so Loho Bakdubitofam, the tribe of Levi, was not counted with all of the other Jews, because ultimately they would be working in the Mishkan. They were separate. But the question is, what made them that way? When did they become that way? So according to the Rambam, it was already in Mitzrayim. They separated themselves, they became as they were. So the Medrash says that they learned Torah, they didn't participate, didn't have to do avodah. You know, it's like from the point of view of the Egyptians, you know, the conqueror always has to figure out what he can give to the conquered that'll enable them to be docile and quiet. Right? When Koresh took over the Babylonian Empire. We took over the Babylonian Empire. So the Babylonians said, we've got to quash religious independence. Babylonians. Because religious independence often leads to revolution. The revolution comes from people who are thinking differently than we are thinking. Koresh. And so they destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. And they did not allow the Beit HaMikdash to be rebuilt. They, who's they? The Babylonians. The Babylonians didn't allow it. When the Persians conquered, when the Persians conquered the Babylonian Empire, they established a different theory. And they said, religion is calming. It's good that people should have someplace to go where they can sing a few songs and be happy together. And so Cyrus Koresh allowed the Jews to start rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash when they came back to Eretz Yisrael. When they came back to Eretz Yisrael. So these theories, right, I mean, it's all the same. Right, the communists didn't like religion. Because they didn't like separate organizations, separate centers of authority. So they decided to wipe it out. Then, towards the end of the reign of communism, they realized that, you know, it's the cheapest way of giving people entertainment. If you know anything about the church in Russia, you know what I mean. And so they reopened it. They didn't believe any more than they believed before. But they thought the people needed it. So all the churches that had become gymnasiums became churches again, you know, in Russia. So the Levium was seen as being special. And therefore, because they were special, they didn't participate in the Egel HaZahav. They're the only ones who had a strong feeling about it. But the Zohar said they actually saved the Jewish people in Egypt and probably saved the Jewish people after the Chet HaEgel. Right? That you can't... HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he would forgive them, but he had to forgive somebody who wants to be forgiven. And the only ones who were in that category, apparently, were the Bnei Levi. So Bnei Levi were not counted by everybody else, but they were counted. The word Aaron has dots on it, which means it either belongs there or it doesn't belong there. The Ramban sees that as being a source for understanding that Moshe Rabbeinu knew that they weren't going to be counted with everybody else, that the subtotal would not be would not include Levi. And that the reason for all of this was that it was ingrained in them, somehow from Yaakov Avinu, according to the Rambam, that they would sit and learn Torah and do the mitzvahs and maintain that tradition. That was their job. And I guess the Egyptians were willing to let them do that because they felt that give it a little in order to get a lot. Okay, have a good job. Next week we'll do Megillas Rus a little bit. Next week, Megillas Rus. I hope. Megillas Rus is very difficult.